Good morning. So we're about ready to begin. I don't know if Joyce is coming or not.
Who?
Joyce.
Oh, need a pen. Okay. Thank you.
We're going to begin because this is the fourth day of Sukkot, or Sukkot. I'll give you, before we do what I was planning to do, I will give you a little bit of a history lesson.
I'm sorry.
There's nothing to be sorry for. It brings up information that people will find interesting, and I think it's important. In 1948, as you all know, the modern state of Israel was created by the United Nations. It was created because the British gave up their role in the land of Palestine, which is what they called it, which they were given in 1917 to be the overview or the supervisor of this land. In 1947, after the Second World War, after the atrocities of Germany and Poland all throughout Europe, the United Nations, England said, enough is enough. We cannot handle this land. The first terrorists in the modern dates were in Israel. You will never see terrorism unless it was done by the Israelis first. And that's throughout history, but we'll get into that in the class on history. The modern state of Israel is split. You have a significant amount of people in Europe who want to go to Israel because they no longer have a home in Europe. They survived the Shoah. Enough is enough. They want a home. So they start landing, and the British don't know how to handle it. The Arabs don't want them. So they interned them on Cyprus. So they went from one concentration camp to another. Different form. One is less onerous than the other, but they're basically concentration camps. Finally, the state is declared. And it wins its independence against the five Arab armies that surround it. Now what happens? The population of Israel that for the last 2,000 years has been based on the Sephardic tradition and now has got a major population that's Ashkenazi. And they talk a different dialect. First off, they don't talk Hebrew. Hebrew was reinvented in the early 1900s by people from Russia. When they made in the United States, we had this big immigration in 1905 from Russia, Eastern Europe, all over the European world. Israel got its share, and they were Jewish, and they were buying the land. The Rothschilds financed the purchase of the land of Israel from the Arabs. The land was fallow. The land was not productive. It was cheap. The kibbutzim was developed as a technique to change the land. So now we have all these Ashkenazis and the Sephardim who are really more Arab than they are Jewish, although that's not a true statement. They're very Jewish, but they've lived with Arabs for 2,000 years peacefully. relatively speaking, in comparison to the Europeans. The major difference in pronunciation of the Hebrew language, the Hebrew letter Taf. The Ashkenazis say it's an S sound. The Sephardic say it's a T sound. Actually, the Ashkenazi says it has two sounds, which it does. So sometimes the Taf will be pronounced with a T sound, and that's if it's in the middle of the word. The end of the word, it's an S sound for the Ashkenazis. So the Sephardic is the T sound for both conditions. They don't know how to resolve it. What do they teach the children, and how do they teach the children to talk in grammar school? These kids are coming from homes that do not speak Hebrew. They speak Polish, they speak Lithuanian, they speak all of those Eastern European languages as their first language. Many speak Yiddish as their first language. What do we do? So there are two chief rabbis in Israel, and that only started in the 1920 with Rav Kook, who was the first chief Ashkenazi rabbi of Israel. Today, they vote on who's going to be the rabbi, who's going to be the chief rabbi of the Sephardic, and who's going to be the chief rabbi of the Ashkenazi. And they respect each other. They respect each other's customs. They know they have different ways of doing things. But in 1948, there are these two chief rabbis. They have to get together and decide who's supreme here. What are we going to teach the children? Took them till 1952. And in 1952, they both agreed that the Sephardic method would be what the language would be in the country. They started to speak, forget Shabbos, it's Shabbat. Forget Sukkot, it's Sukkot. Those are just two examples, and they're spread throughout the language. Because one of the feminine endings is Yud Taf. So there are a lot of Hebrew words with that feminine ending, with the Taf at the end of the word. So that is the history of what you're struggling with right now. And yet, if you go into the Ashkenazi, even within the Ashkenazi, they didn't accept it. They still call it Shabbos because nobody was going to change. They still call it Sukkos. I can't even pronounce it. I'm sorry.
Sukkos.
Because nobody wants to change. But the reality is, if you go to Israel, nobody calls it Sukkos, it's Sukkot. Because the kids have grown up, they've learned, and when they were speaking Hebrew as a first language, they learned the T sound, except in those Ashkenazi homes that keep their tradition. So in time it will change, or the Mashiach will come and say, they're both right, and this is how we do things. So,
I personally used to go to a feeding court for the male, is bar.
Right.
For the female, it's a bas.
It's bas or bat.
But I knew that it meant the same thing, so whatever was the male.
But that, it's, as I said, the taf at the end of a word is a feminine ending. There are many verbs that end that way.
Thank you. Now I'll try to cover.
Words like Adonai or
Adonai.
Adonai. Is that a different background?
No. Have you ever seen the word God spelled G-D?
All the time.
Is that the correct spelling? It's G-O-D, right?
No.
Why do people do that?
I think because that was discarded, if that literature that was discarded, it's not creating a problem.
It's a form of honoring the Creator.
Absolutely.
It's a form of saying this is a special word, and we do not spell that word. We do not say that word. Other people say, what are you bothering me? Adonai is a way of pronouncing Adonai that isn't the same pronunciation. It's a way of not saying God's name and still saying God's name. It's exactly the same thing as spelling it G-D.
So it's hot.
Another way, they'll say Adanam.
Whichever one of those you give, it's really not God's name.
No.
It's something you say instead of God's name.
Now you're getting confused.
Okay. Well, or I already was.
There are many names of God.
Yes.
What that means is that there are many attributes of God. So, Adonai, spelled Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, which translates as master. Or actually, it's my master. Adon means master or mister. In modern terms, it's mister, but that if you go back in the English language and through the centuries, they used to say master. The yud at the end of the word means my. So Adonai means my master. That's the literal translation. Now, the attribute of God that is active in the physical world is this name Adonai, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. That's what we're talking about. They don't say Adonai, they say Adonam, I can't even pronounce the other one that you mentioned.
Adonai.
Okay? It's a dialect. It's a difference with that I'm not saying Adonai, because the correct Hebrew pronunciation of Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, Adonai. Nun, Yud, it would be a dot under the Nun as an E, but it's pronounced I, A-I. Adonai. We understand that? Okay. Now, when we say Yud Hey Vav Hey, we're not supposed to know the pronunciation of that name. It was only pronounced in the temple on Yom Kippur, only the high priest knew how to pronounce the name. And that's a true story, but it's a story. Everybody who was in the temple heard the name. And as soon as they left the temple, they forgot it. Miracle. Every human being who was ever in the temple on Yom Kippur heard the high priest pronounce the name. They knew how to pronounce it. And we still know how to pronounce it today. I don't know, but there is one person in the world who does. That person is the highest spiritual level. And he's not publicized, obviously. Given that understanding, Yud Hey Vav Hey, the sages say, we don't know how to pronounce this. We don't want you to pronounce it because you cannot handle the light that is drawn when you pronounce it. So instead of saying, what whatever Hashem's name is supposed to sound like, you say Adonai, because you are unifying the physical, which is the attribute of Adonai, with the spiritual, which is the attribute of Hashem. That's why we do that. And so you can be reading a prayer, and you'll see the word Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, and you'll pronounce it Adonai. And you'll go along, and you'll see Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey, and you'll pronounce it Adonai. That's where the confusion begins to come from.
Well, Toby says Adonai.
Again, it's that same idea. He doesn't say Adonai when he's reading the Torah.
Oh. So,
I've always thought of the name.
Hashem is, that's the translation of the name.
As God's ultimate name. And my understanding is that, I should have been saying we don't say it or try to say it. And so that people would say Adonai instead of the name.
The sages dictated this law. We don't say the name. We don't know the name. That went from we don't say the name to we don't know the name. The sages dictated, meaning the Talmud dictated, what we say is Adonai whenever we see the name. And we never say Adonai when we see the name if we're studying and not praying. Which is why Toby says, Adonai. But he, when he reads the Torah, he says Adonai.
That's not a universal custom to say Adonai.
It is a universal custom to say Adonai when you're praying. There are different customs in how you read that and how you say that. My custom is to say Hashem. Now we're about to read the Torah for the holiday of Sukkot. This is the fourth day of Sukkot. It's the second day of Chol HaMoed. What's the difference between the first 2 days and those next 5 days? The whole other discussion would be about 3 hours worth. So we're not going to go there. But what's important, as I said Saturday morning, in my opinion, but I think it's more than an opinion. We are sacrificing 70 bulls. Each of those bulls are being sacrificed to Hashem. But then Hashem is dividing that energy. And I use the English word energy because if I said to you chashmal in Hebrew, Hashem is dividing that chashmal among the 70 nations. One nation gets more, one nation gets less. One nation may have more people. One nation may need more energy to survive whatever their chaos is going to be this year. Hashem makes that determination. Why don't I say chashmal? Why do I use the word energy? Because chashmal has come to be used in modern Hebrew as electricity. Electricity is energy. But chashmal is a word that's used in the visions of Ezekiel. Nobody really understood it then. This was the word. What does it mean? It means metaphysical energy that we can't perceive. But Ezekiel could perceive it. That was his vision. So I hesitate to say Chashmal, so I use the word energy. So we are going to be reading two.
One more question.
Sure. Go ahead.
So when people write God, some people will write God and some write G.
Hyphen
D.
Right.
I've heard both that since that is the name of God, you shouldn't write it S-G-O-D.
That is the explanation, yes.
And other people say that that's not really the name of God, where you need to kind of be that careful with all that you expect. And so if I'm writing it, why I do G-D just because I know if my understanding of what I said was correct. So the other people see it and they think you shouldn't spell out G-O-D. Then I'm just respecting their way of doing it.
That's fine too. This is what you do. It's your custom. It's appropriate. It's not going against any halakha, because G-O-D is a commentary on the name Hashem. It's a translation of the name Hashem, but the reason I say it's a commentary, because the same word, G-O-D or G-hyphen-D, is used for Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. The same word is used for Elohim. So which name is being described when you write G-hyphen-D? And this is one of the ways we understand that the English language is designed as a physical language, while the Hebrew language is designed as a metaphysical language. How do I prove that to you? About 7 hours later, we'll come to some understanding. So we won't go into it today. But we do need to share the energy each and every day of Sukkot. And so today being the second day of Chol HaMoed, or the fourth day of the holiday, I'm going to start with the L'shem Yichud, and then I'm going to read a very few verses from
what
the Torah.
What does Chol HaMoed translate to English?
Literally?
All something.
It's not all. It's spelled C-H-O-L. It's Kuf. It's a voice of time, is a way to understand it. But what does that mean to us? It's a unique time. Chol HaMoed is not a holiday, and it's not a normal day. It's a unique time. Is that helpful? We do some things. Are you supposed to work on Chol HaMoed? Yes, you can work. But try not to do exactly the same thing you do during the mundane days, the normal days. But as I will say, we'll start with the L'shem Yichud to unify all of us with the Jewish world, because we all are required to make the sharing consciousness. L'shem Yichud, Kud Shabarichu, Ishkinte, Bithilu, Urchimu, Ad Udhilu, Urchimu, Urchimu, Udhilu, Leakta, L'shem, Yudhe, Bavavhe, Beyehuda, Shalim, B'shem, Kol Yisrael, Limun Torah Mitzvah, La Sok Torah Mitzvah, Vayehino Amadunai Elohenu Aleinu Maasei Yadenu Kurnei Aleinu Maasei Yadenu Kurneihu. Uvayom Hashlishi Parim Ashte Asar Eilim Shenaim Kiva Asim B'nei Shana Arba Asar Tamimim Umin Chatam V'nizkehem Laparim Laelem V'lach Vasim B'misparam Kamishpat Uzir Hatat Echad milvad olata ha-tamid umin chata beniska. Uvayom harveyai parim asara elim Shanaim kivasim b'nei shana arba'a asar tamimim min chatam v'nizkehem laparim la'elim v'lak vasim umisparam kamishpat ushir uzir izim echad Chatat milvad olad hatamid min chata v'nizka. Uvayom ha-chamishi parim tisha elim shenayim kavasim b'nei shana arba'a hasar tamimim Umin chatam v'nizkehem laparim la'elim v'lach vasim v'misparam kamishpat usir hatat echad milvad olad hatamid umin chatam v'nizka. We have shared with we actually shared with 11 bulls, and then we shared with 10 bulls, and then we shared with 9 bulls. What happens is essentially you're reading each of the days sharing 3 times, the day before, the actual day of that slaughtering, that sacrificing, and the day after. And we all know, or by now we should know, whenever you connect to the number 3, you're connecting to the 3 columns of the tree of life. Right column that's sharing, left column that's receiving, and the central column that is the balance. So you did a mitzvah just now by listening to this without saying anything, but by thinking about sharing, which is what I set up in your minds when I explained what we were doing. So are we ready to discuss letters? Or do we have questions? Next letter is the Dalet. The Hebrew letter Dalet is the 4th letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It is a letter that makes the sound of D. And the numerical value of Dalet is 4. Please note, Dalet, D-A-L-E-T, not D-A-L-E-D. We hear the T and the D as similar sounds. They come from the same part of the mouth.
T. Right?
With a T, yes. Now here you can see how it's spelled in Hebrew. Dalid Lamed Taf.
Okay.
fourth letter of the Hebrew alphabet is Dalet. It has a numerical value of 4. What's the first letter? Aleph. What's the second letter?
Bet.
What's the third letter? We haven't learned it.
Gimel.
The fourth letter?
Dalet.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh.
The Aleph is 1. The Bet is 2. The Gimel is 3, even though you don't know it yet. And the Dalet is 4. What is the fifth letter?
Hey.
You know the hey. What's the numerical value? 5. The first 10 letters counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Why are there 7 days in a week?
Because God created the earth in 7 days.
And if that answers the question and you're satisfied with the answer, that's fine. It didn't satisfy me. So I kept asking the question, and then it was explained to me. If you add 1 plus 2 is 3, plus 3 is 6, plus 4 is 10, plus 5 is 15, plus 6 is 21. 7 is the first number that goes over 22 letters, so it's inclusive of all of the 22 letters. And that's why there's 7 days in a week. In every society of history, everywhere in the world, every location, for 5 million of years or 10,000 years or 5,000 years, whatever number you want to look at it, whatever way you want to count time, there's never been a society that had 5 days in a week. Never been a society that had 10 days in a week. Every society has always had 7 days in a week. Why? It's built into the human being. But nobody can.
What do you mean by society? Country or nation or?
A society is this table, the people here. A society is a group of people. A society is a country because it's a group of people, not because it's a country. Country is designated by that group of people. We identify with Washington, D.C. as the capital. We identify with London as the capital of England. Every country has a society. The society is a culture. What's the difference between a society and a culture is a good 2-hour conversation. Let's continue to learn the Dalet. The fourth letter of the Hebrew alphabet is Dalet, and it still has a numerical value of 4, and the sound of the D. Now let's look at, and we've looked at the name of the letter. What is the meaning of that word Dalet? Dalet, Lama. A door. It's a doorway. Absolutely correct. What's the inner essence of the Dalet? Is it a door? Or what does the door do?
Open.
Or?
Close.
Is it a door or a doorway? Doorway, I would
say. What's the difference?
A door
is a piece of wood, for lack of a better description.
Yeah, it's the solid thing that fills the doorway.
Right.
Shut it.
We agree. What's a doorway?
The doorway is
a passage.
The frame in Hebrew is a mezuzah. And you're used to the word mezuzah as something else. But it's basically the lintel, the frame of the door. Dalet is a door. It is the thing that closes or the thing that opens. But it will also be utilized in the sense of a doorway, meaning a frame, an opening that doesn't have a way to close it. That's the meaning of doorway, in my mind. I haven't looked it up to really determine that. And I always am wrong when I look at the definitions of words. If you look at the Dalet, it's called the dented letter. And the reason it's called the dented letter is because of this dent at the right here. The dent. Now, when you see it in the Siddur, or you see it in Hebrew writing, in modern Hebrew writing, the block letters, you don't see that indentation, and we'll show it to you in the next slide. But the next slide is showing you that there's a straight line. But it's not at the end. It's slightly indented. It's slightly moved into the end of the top. Yes. If it was on the end, it's too easy to mistake it for a resh, as you said. So the author of this, I always forget the word from Microsoft. No, it's not a book. It is a book, but it'll come to me. One reminder for the sound and shape of the letter of the Dalet is to call it the dented letter, because the line is not at the end of the top line. It's indented slightly. The other important thing to notice is that the Dalet comes to the bottom of the letter space. Did you know there's a letter space? It's the first time it's being introduced. In the Torah, when the scribe says, I'm going to write a Torah, I'm going to spend the next year or two of my life writing this Torah. And he says, well, first thing I need is a quill and a pen and the ink. Second thing I need is the scroll. Is the parchment. It's not parchment, but it's an animal skin that is treated in a special way. The first thing he does when he receives the animal skin,
all the lines,
is he scores the animal skin. It's like drawing a line. He takes a ruler, a straight edge, and he takes an awl and he runs it across the straight edge, and it creates an indentation in the skin. And then he does that 42 times. There's 42 lines in every column. When you make a Dalet, it goes from the top to the bottom of that space. When you make a Kaf Sofit, looks exactly like a Dalet, except it's below the line, goes below that second score. Well, we showed it to you once, but we'll show it. You know it. You can look there. You see the Kaf Sofit. It's on the third line. The Kaf Sofit is longer. It goes below the letter space.
Final
letter. So final letter for the letter Kaf, correct. And the Dalet is one of the most difficult letters to read because it looks so much like the Resh that you make that mistake. And it looks so much like the Kaf Sofit, you make that mistake. So it's important to realize when we're talking about the Dalet, how to read it, how to identify it from the other letters. In the next sheet, we're taught how to write the letter. And actually, you need to go down one more. It's made in two strokes, just like the Resh. Or the Resh was made in one stroke. But the important thing to notice, the first stroke is at the top horizontal. Start at the top left and draw the first stroke to the top right, straight line. Then you pick up the pen or pencil. You don't leave it on the tape, on the paper. You pick it up and you set it down slightly indented from the right corner. And then you draw that second straight line straight down. The way you identify the Dalet in the block form, in the Siddur and everywhere else, is you will see it as two lines of a square, top and right side of a square. But it's not exactly a square because that vertical line is indented.
Why are we going over the Dalet again? We already did it.
No, we just showed it to you when to explain the race. The race. Then we went and explained the Ayin, and now we're explaining the Dalet. We never really taught the Dalet up till now.
Yeah, we said oxygen, fire, water. No, that was Aleph.
Correct. Which is why I didn't do it today because we're in Sukkot and the time I used for the reading of the Torah. But the important aspect is we will be repeating the inner essence of each letter each week. So we constantly reinforce this understanding of what is the letter teaching us. The Dalet is a doorway, but that's the physical effect. What's the spiritual cause? You need to create a way of closing or opening space. The energy of the Dalet is the ability to open or to close.
Could it mean that usually at the beginning of the word or the end of the word?
If you have a Dalet at the end, you would think it would be closing. That's correct. But you have to look at each word. It could very well be something else. Joe made the statement of the ultimate name of God. I think that was the word used. And you went ahead and said the ultimate name is XYZ. I didn't answer you at that time. The thought came to me I should say it, but I decided not to, but I'm going to say it now. The ultimate name of God is 304,000 letters long. It is every letter of the Torah creates one name of God. Every letter of the Torah is unified as one essence. Can a human mind understand 304,000? Can it even develop a machine that can understand 304,000? Because those 304,000 relate to what is its location within the structure of the 304,000? And is that a circle structure, or is it a line, or is it something else? Which of the letters are in one dimension, which are in other dimensions? This is the name of God. And as everything I've said to you just now doesn't detract from the fact that it's one name of God. The ultimate name of God includes all of the attributes, doesn't it? There's 304,000 letters that are unified in one attribute. But to get to that attribute, you have to also get to the 303,000 letter, a name of 303,000 letters, another name of 302,000 letters, and I didn't count the 303,900 or 999. All of those are attributes of God. We don't understand them. We don't need to, because we've been taught to use 22 of them, 22 letters, to create different names of Hashem that represent his attributes. Just as DNA consists of 4 amino acids, but it makes up how many trillions of combinations. Is it overwhelming?
Yes.
So what do you do when you're overwhelmed? You go back to the basics. The Aleph has the essence of unity. The Bet has the essence of house. The third letter we learned was the Mem. And the Mem has the essence of water, which is the essence of chesed, loving kindness.
The sharing,
correct. The fourth letter that we studied after the Mem was, I believe, the Hay. And the Hay means a world unto itself. The Hay means either physicality or spirituality. We also learned the Ayin, which is the eye, sight. That's 5 letters, and today is our 8th letter, so there's 2 missing letters. What are they? The Resh. The Resh means foreignness, but it also means the head. Who do we follow, the head or the tail? Depends on where you are in your process. And there's one other letter that I don't remember which one we studied, but you may know which one did. What was the letter we did? The what?
Sure.
No, we didn't. We mentioned it. We didn't study it.
That's fine. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Am I pronouncing it right? Shin?
Shin.
Sure.
Or it could be also a sin.
I don't know. It depends on
which side of the dot. Let me look and see if I can remember. We did study the Kaf also. The backward C. So let us finish our study of the Dalit. And it's this is the letter Kaf, even though it looks like a letter Dalit. What makes it the Kaf? It's the final letter. It goes below the line.
Oh.
Here. The only way to really see it is to overlay it. And he didn't do that. It's really not clear, but here it's clear. It's shorter. It doesn't go all the way down. So the Dalit can look like a resh. The difference is the rounded corner versus being indented from the corner. The Dalit looks like a kaf sofit. The difference is the length of the downstroke.
What's the two dots?
What two dots? The two dots are the shvat, the vowel, but it's inside the letter, isn't it? But why is it inside the letter?
Oh, because
if where are you going to put it? It's below the line. It has to be inside the letter. Vowels are below the letters, above the letters, and to the left side of the letters. You'll never see a dot, the vowel, to the right of the letter, except for the letter shin, which I'll explain when we get there. But all of look along the line of down, of look along the line, they're all the bottom line where the vowels are. They're always above the letter, below the letter, or to the left of the letter. Yes. And not Aleph Bet.
Bet. It's a Bet, not Bet. It is a V. It is a Bet.
No, it's a look below it.
Okay, both.
It's both. Why?
That makes
the dot makes a difference. The dot is called a Dagesh. Understand. But it's important to recognize it. The bet has two sounds.
If I was putting that with the bet on top,
and I would too, because normally we say Aleph Bet. The bet is the primary.
That's what I was wondering.
Why do they put the bet on top?
You'll have to ask the man who designed this. I have no justification for why it's called the bet. But it brings up a point to reinforce to new students two sounds. Just
state that the dog ish is part of the letter and not a vowel sound. That
it's in the middle of the letter. It's not a vowel. The only place it's in the middle of the letter is in the final letters. The vowels can be in the middle of a letter of a final letter, but only because the final letter, that the particular final letter, not all of them, goes below the line. And if you're below the line, where is the space for the dots, for the vowel? So Judaism is very practical. They could have put the vowel above it, couldn't they? But it wouldn't be the same meaning as the vowel, the two dots, one above the other, that go below the letter.
Begin to understand why some people find it easier to read the Hebrew with just the consonants.
It's confusing with the vowels. But now let me ask you. The word av or ab, depending on which sound you're looking for, but they both mean Father. Now look at the essence of the two letters. Aleph is unity. Bet is house. Is a father a house of unity? Was your father a source of strength? When you use the word father, do you mean a source of strength? House of unity, is that a source of strength?
Father.
Ab means father, correct. Abba or but Abba is spelled Aleph Bet Aleph. Abba, the word Bo, which means come, Bet Aleph, come unity. Or more easily understandable in English, unity comes. That's the Father. In the traditional states of 80 years ago, wait till your father gets home. He's going to give it to you.
I'm laughing because of that personal story on that.
We all do.
Yeah. Might not be quite your average
one. I'm sure it isn't, Chuck. No, we're out of time. Are there any questions on the conference call? Have a beautiful day.